person forcibly displaced now every 2 seconds.
This is World Refugee Day, and the United States president changes his immigration plan. It's Thursday, June 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You're part of this program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, some new developments in the U.S.-China trade dispute. A report shows North Koreans are healthier than they had been. And almost 200 are dead in the wake of a ferry sinking in Sumatra. It's all on today's VOA Asia. An unprecedented 68.5 million people have been forcibly displaced from their homelands worldwide, the highest levels of displacement on record. That according to a just-released report by UNHCR, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. In June of 2016, the UN Refugee Agency launched the hashtag with refugees petition to petition governments to work together and do their fair share for refugees. But as the world gets ready for World Refugee Day on June 20th, that message was not really being heeded. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
There are over 68 million refugees around the world, according to a new report by UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency. Spokesperson Chris Boyan says the situation is dire.
There's a person forcibly displaced now every 2 seconds. These are people that are fleeing not by choice, but because they have no choice but to flee if they want to stay alive.
Boyan says driving the worldwide exodus, war, conflict, and persecution.
We've seen new conflicts arise in countries and regions around the world that didn't exist before, but that are driving displacement of human beings in very large numbers now.
Boyan says no one chooses to become a refugee.
And refugees are human beings, just like you and me, who have found themselves in extremely unfortunate circumstances.
But it's easy to lose sight of core humanitarian principles when responding to the refugee crisis. Eskinder Nagash, president and CEO of the U.S. Committee for Refugees, says governments often treat the refugee crisis as a national security issue rather than a humanitarian one.
They don't see them as another human being. They just see them as a burden to a society. The governments are actually fearing refugees. When you fear somebody, you don't necessarily welcome them.
Nagash says the modern refugee problem started about 60 years ago when the international community started trying to warehouse refugees.
When you actually keep refugees warehoused for 20, 30, 50, 60 years, that's really a major humanitarian crisis.
But Boyan says it's not a problem that can be dealt with on a country-by-country basis.
This really is a global problem. It's a human problem. And we advocate for all countries to work together to find workable collective solutions to this collective problem.
Spain recently provided a good example of collective problem solving.
The response that Spain showed over the past week in accepting that ship that was on the high seas full of very, very desperate people was an example of humanity, of compassion, and of the right thing to do. It's important to be methodical, and it is important to keep those core principles at the front of our minds in terms of how we want our world to be today, how we want it to look tomorrow for our children and grandchildren. What sort of values are important to us? It's now when these things are being decided.
While the refugee problem is indeed a global crisis, Boyan says it's a manageable one, a crisis that will require the world's courage, leadership, and vision. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
The UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grande, said his agency expressed its concern to the United States over the U.S. separating children of asylum seekers from their families and had raised the issue with Washington. Washington apparently listened, not just to Grande, but to many others as well. President Donald Trump Wednesday signed an executive order.
It's about keeping families together, while at the same time being sure that we have a very powerful, very strong border, and border security will be equal, if not greater, than previously. So we're going to have strong, very strong borders, but we're going to keep the families together. I didn't like the sight or the feeling of families being separated.
For days, Trump and key officials in his administration had contended that he could not act unilaterally to overturn the policy and that only Congress, through legislation, could ban the breakup of families. The U.S. in the last 6 weeks has separated more than 2,300 young children from their parents and sent them to detention centers while charging their parents with illegally entering the country. But the Trump administration has come under withering attack for the policy, with Republican and Democratic officials alike calling it inhumane. Business and religious leaders, four former U.S. First Ladies, and Trump's wife, Melania Trump, also voiced sharp criticism of the policy to split up migrant families, many of them escaping poverty and turmoil in Central America as they illegally crossed the U.S. border. We invite you to read more in our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and at the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories currently trending on VOA Asia. More than half of American voters say U.S. President Trump's recent meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un reduced the likelihood of nuclear war, that according to a poll released Wednesday. A pre-dawn Taliban attack in western Afghanistan killed 30 members of government forces, the deadliest insurgent raid since a nationwide temporary ceasefire during the Muslim festival of Eid al-Fitr. In commemoration of Wednesday's World Refugee Day, human rights group Amnesty International called for the international community to provide aid for more than 900,000 Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh. And Indonesia has been chosen as one of five non-permanent members of the United Nations Security Council. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. As trade tensions between the world's two top economies increase, the European Union Chamber of Commerce in Beijing said a new survey finds that one of every five foreign companies in China feels compelled to hand over technology in exchange for market access. The survey was released as the Trump administration applies pressure on China for structural changes in economic and trade policy. The U.S. is preparing to target another $200 billion in Chinese imports with 10% tariffs, that on top of the $50 billion penalized with 25% duties. Trump economic advisor Peter Navarro spoke with reporters via conference call on Tuesday.
What we're trying to do here is simply defend ourselves against Chinese economic aggression and bring about structural change. China does have much more to lose than we do, and they have a choice to make. They're a sovereign nation and a superpower. But in many ways, what they do will help define our future relationship. And I think that by attacking our farmers, our ranchers, other parts of our economy in the way which they appear to be doing, they run the risk of really raising the awareness of the American people in a way which will be ultimately beneficial to this whole trade dispute, because the people of this country, a lot of them who've been put out of work by the Chinese, the millions of people, particularly across states like Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, North Carolina, these people are aware of the unfair trade practices that China's engaged in.
China has warned of countermeasures. In an editorial in the state-run China Daily, Beijing said it appears any concessions will not appease the Trump administration, which wants to suck the lifeblood from the Chinese economy, it said. It said the U.S. is escalating its trade assault on China and warned there will be a heavy price to pay as China tries to avoid being a victim of the Trump administration's growing bloodlust. Andrew Polk of the Beijing-based analysis group Trivium China told VOA's Victor Vidi that Chinese actions have been measured and proportionate, but the strident rhetoric is aimed at preparing the country for damage to the economy.
This is part of an effort to make sure that if the trade war does cause damage to the Chinese economy, that the propaganda machine has clearly laid the blame at the feet of the Trump administration. So the Chinese are going to use every tool in the toolkit to make sure that the leadership of China doesn't get blamed, but rather to use this as a nationalist tool so that if they do have to go through some pain, there's a rallying cry that the populace can kind of stand behind.
What's the vantage point there in China? What's the reaction? You deal with American investors from time to time. Are they nervous?
Yeah, everybody's nervous. I mean, American companies in particular are nervous. I think investors are clearly nervous because you're seeing this play out particularly in the stock market. You're likely to continue to see stock markets be nervous as tensions continue to ratchet up. Investors still have the sense that this isn't necessarily going to have an outsized impact on either economy. So hopefully, you know, it won't tank growth in either China or the U.S., but it will have an outsized impact on individual companies. That's why companies are really struggling. They're really nervous because American multinationals, there's no real way for them to move around this. Their only recourse is really to lobby both sides to try to back down. And the Chinese are saying to them, well, we can't back down as long as Trump is being, you know, aggressive in making the first move.
White House trade advisor Peter Navarro, in a conference call with reporters on Tuesday, said if the Chinese thought they could buy us off with cheap extra products sold and allow them to continue to steal our intellectual property and crown jewels, that was a miscalculation.
Yeah, I guess it was a miscalculation because the Chinese thought that they could use sweeteners, they could use carrots, and, you know, increase market access and more purchases of American goods to head off a trade war. And I think it was a miscalculation in that they potentially underestimated how devoted Donald Trump himself and other elements within his administration were to inciting a trade war. And so that was a miscalculation. But at the same time, the Chinese played their hand about as well as they could. They delayed the inevitable for quite a while, which gave themselves time to draw up plans in the case that the trade war did start. And now that it started, you can see that they're reacting very quickly because they have had bought themselves time to figure out a reaction plan.
Andrew Polk said there is little hope in China that trade tensions will ease anytime soon, and both sides stand to lose as a result. He said China's industrial plan, known as Made in China 2025, to dominate the future of technology is non-negotiable. However, Beijing is frustrated, he said, by Washington's inability to recognize the slow and steady progress in protecting intellectual property. Happening now in Asia, South Korean Foreign Minister Kang Kyung-hwa said on Wednesday that the U.S. and South Korea jointly made the decision to suspend combined military exercises scheduled for August, but would not confirm if her government was given advance notice before U.S. President Trump announced his intention to cancel the drills. Dozens of Cambodian staff at the U.S. Embassy in Cambodia staged a protest claiming they were wrongfully fired for allegedly sharing child pornography. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We continue now. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un departed Beijing for Pyongyang Wednesday after completing a two-day visit to China. The North's official Korean Central News Agency said Kim thanked Chinese President Xi Jinping for supporting Kim's historic summit with U.S. President Donald Trump last week in Singapore. Kim also said Pyongyang and Beijing had entered into a new era of bilateral cooperation and friendship. After a final meeting with President Xi, the North Korean leader visited an agricultural technology park and rail traffic control center before his departure. A survey of 8,500 households conducted last year in North Korea finds a big drop in child stunting and malnutrition since the last poll taken in 2009. The UN Children's Fund reports the information comes from a so-called multiple indicator cluster survey used in more than 100 countries and supported, monitored, and analyzed by UNICEF. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the survey in Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund says the decision by the Democratic People's Republic of Korea to make the survey results publicly available may indicate a new openness in this traditionally closed society. The UNICEF Regional Director for Asia and the Pacific, Karin Hulsoff, says acknowledging the accuracy of data increases the effectiveness of humanitarian programs, which is important in saving lives. On the positive side, she notes the data show all children in North Korea go to school and complete their studies. She says 3 out of 5 adolescents aged 15 to 19 have information, communication, and technology skills. She also says all children throughout the country are vaccinated against life-threatening diseases.
The rate of stunting, that's the indicator of chronic malnutrition in children, has dropped significantly nationwide, from 32% in 2009 to 19% in 2017. Considerable humanitarian support has been provided, aimed at reducing chronic malnutrition in recent years.
But many problems persist. The data show drinking water is contaminated in more than one-third of households. UNICEF says unsafe water can cause diarrhea and is a leading contributor to malnutrition and death globally. In North Korea, the results show diarrhea affects 1 in 10 children. It says the health and nutritional status of children is worse in rural than in urban areas. Hulsoff tells VOA she does not believe the newfound openness in North Korea is linked to the recent summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Now, these data were collected in 2017. That has not much to do with the developments in 2018. It is just sheer coincidence that the summits took place in the time that we were analyzing our 8,500 household survey results.
Nevertheless, she welcomes the government's greater openness, saying humanitarian agencies now can access about 90% of North Korea's 208 counties. Where there is access, she says, there is aid, and more aid will improve the well-being of children. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up on VOA Asia, the latest as far as a ferry sinking and a great loss of life in Sumatra. Stay with us. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. President Trump said Wednesday he's signing an executive order that would end the policy of separating migrant children from their parents as they illegally cross the southern border with Mexico into the U.S. Western tour operators say that in the wake of Kim Jong-un's summit with U.S. President Trump, anti-American souvenirs, once sold on the North Korean side of the demilitarized zone, have disappeared from the shelves of gift shops. Hackers stole more than $30 million U.S. dollars worth of cryptocurrencies from South Korea's top Bitcoin exchange, sending the unit's price falling around the world on Wednesday. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. The death toll from the Indonesian ferry disaster could top 180. As a matter of fact, it already has risen up to 190, as authorities raised an estimate of the number of people missing 2 days after the wooden tourist boat sank in Lake Toba on the island of Sumatra. This news alert from VOA Asia, a report released on Wednesday's World Refugee Day, says adolescent Rohingya girls who have fled to Bangladesh feel isolated. 75% of them say they have no ability to make decisions about their own lives. A top leader of Bangladesh's main opposition party says former Prime Minister Khalida Zia, who has been imprisoned on corruption charges, is critically ill and could be paralyzed if not treated urgently. An official from the White House has indicated President Trump could travel to Malaysia in November after the 33rd ASEAN summit held in Singapore. And U.S. National Security Council Director for Asian Affairs Matt Pottinger said Trump has expressed hopes to strengthen the comprehensive partnership between the two nations. All those stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The head of UNAIDS says testing for the HIV virus is critical in reaching the goal of eliminating the virus by 2030. But the UN official tells VOA the effort is hampered in many countries by social taboos and stigma attached to AIDS and other HIV-related diseases. VOA's Lata Chahok has more.
Just a few years ago, it was hard to get treatment for all the people infected by the virus that can cause AIDS and other ailments. But now health officials hope to eradicate the deadly virus by 2030.
In 2001, in South Africa, we had only 90 people on treatment on public services. Today, we are talking about 4.3 million people on treatment.
Michelle Sidibe is a United Nations official in charge of a global effort to combat HIV. He says progress has been achieved through solidarity between nations and cooperation between the private and public sectors, with more effective medication and availability of treatment. Most African countries are on track to control the disease, but not all.
West Africa, Central Africa, completely left behind. When we have 61% of the people on treatment globally, we in this region, we have only 35% of people on treatment.
Efforts have to be accelerated in the countries that lag behind.
We still have a low coverage in terms of treatment for children, and we need to really accelerate our action on that front.
Cultural taboos are another hurdle in fighting the disease. Sidibe says most African men aged 25 to 39 avoid testing for HIV because of the stigma attached to it, and they continue to spread the virus unknowingly. He says in such societies, the effort must be to make self-testing widely available.
The family-centered approach and also community-based approach will become central to what we will do in the future if we want to really reach those millions of people who don't know their status and are still continuing to infect other people.
An upcoming UNAIDS conference will focus on improving prevention programs, especially for the most vulnerable groups such as drug addicts, sex workers, and homosexuals. Sidibe says it is important to understand that HIV is not an isolated disease, but is linked to cervical cancer, tuberculosis, maternal health, and other issues. Since the first cases of HIV were reported more than 35 years ago, 78 million people have become infected with HIV, and 35 million have died from AIDS-related illnesses. UNAIDS started its operations in 1996 to spur local efforts and innovation that would ultimately consign HIV to history. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Well, if you are following the World Cup, as most of you most certainly are, you might not want to hear some of these scores because you'll be watching it on delayed tape or whatever. But nevertheless, it was a day of upsets in an underdog-friendly World Cup. Japan knocked off Colombia, thus becoming the first Asian team to beat a squad from South America in the tournament's history. Then Senegal got past eighth-ranked Poland. Six of the top eight teams in the FIFA rankings failed to win their initial matches. No one was quite sure what to expect out of Egypt, which got star Mohamed Salah back from injury, but a second straight dominant performance by host nation Russia was still a surprise. Russia scored three goals in 15 minutes and held on to win 3-1. The host had benefited from a weaker-than-average group, but still have played exceptionally and are all but guaranteed a spot in the second round. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get your program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com and let's hear from you on VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Greg Burns, managing director, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.